Hi guys, my name is Nefe and welcome back to the Let's Talk Nigeria show with Nefe. Yes, and it's great to be here again. It's great to be on this episode again. And if you can tell, my voice sounds better because somebody who loves me called me a mic for my birthday. My birthday was 2 Fridays ago and I got a mic. So I promise you guys you'll be getting better sounds on the podcast. But thank you for sticking with me through my bad sound. It only gets better from this point. Well, on the last episode, we talked about Made for Nigeria. If you remember, I talked about how certain companies have left Nigeria just because of the cost of production. I gave example of how a couple of years ago, Unilever had to move production of Blue Band from Nigeria to Ghana. So if you buy Blue Band butter, what you see is made in Ghana for Nigeria. And just a couple of months ago, Unilever also announced that they are moving Omo, Sunlight, and Lux away from Nigeria. And it just goes to show how a lot of bad policies, how a lot of mismanagement of public funds have led to a lot of Nigerians losing their job. If the right policies were in place, if there was no Naira crunch, if it wasn't so hard for everybody to get foreign exchange, I'm sure Unilever would not be moving their product out. But I mean, it's sad that this is what it is. And this is, well, I'm not going to talk so much about that. You can go and check it out. The last episode is called Made for Nigeria. You should check it out. But today's episode is really nice because I'm not going to be talking alone. I have two amazing ladies. I've been attacked several times that I've never had a lady on the podcast. And to be very fair, it was not intentional. It was like, I'm not a sexist. I'm not a patriarch. I love women as human beings because I have two beautiful sisters. So on today's episode, because I've never had a female, I'm bringing two females on today's episode, double for the people that have been attacking me. Two women for you that would speak beautifully. I'm not going to talk too much about them. I'll let them introduce themselves. They are amazing people. I've got to know them. I've followed them to an extent, and I can tell you that they are amazing. They are loaded, and they are amazing Nigerian women. So, and without wasting much time, I would give it to them to introduce themselves in like 1 minute, alphabetically. I think alphabetically, I'll have Afsat speak first. So, I call her Umi, but our government name is Afsat. So, Afsat, over to you. Can you just introduce yourself to us, please?
Hi, good afternoon. Depending on what city you're hearing from and what time you're listening to us, my name is Hafsat Sadiq. My friends call me Umi. I am a lawyer, I'm a gender advocate, and also a project manager. I work around the development space in Nigeria and West Africa, and particularly in the policy and governance sector. So yes, it's really exciting to be here with these amazing guests. I'm really glad that I'm breaking that. I'm the one who's, helping break that no women on the podcasting. So it's really exciting.
So
Thanks for
just to be
having
clear,
me.
there was no women thing. It just never happened. There has been time I tried to get women on board, but it just didn't work out. So it's not like there was a no
I'm
women thing.
glad. I'm
Well,
glad regardless. I'm glad that myself and your co-guests are guessing, we're coming with double trouble.
double trouble, yeah. And then to the other guest, Wemi, I would like you to just quickly introduce yourself.
Hi, good afternoon, depending on where you're listening from. My name is Wemi Lubert, and I am a creative and advocate for good governance. And yes, I'm glad that I'm one of the first females to be on this podcast. That's like really cool, so that I can always go back and just say, oh, by the way, I was one of two females that came on this particular podcast. So we've broken the jinx for the other women to do
People should stop
it.
saying
We
jinx. There's
have
no jinx.
energy. It
But
was a jinx,
it
man.
wasn't a
You
jinx.
weren't
It
able
just,
to
it just.
successfully get women here.
Okay,
And now we've done
fine,
it.
fine. You win,
Yes.
you win. But yeah, thank you guys for coming. I must say that Afsat has this amazing thing she does on Instagram. Umi has this amazing Instagram live session she does every Sunday where they talk about policies and things affecting Nigeria. I was a guest on it last Sunday and it was super amazing.
It
Wemi
was.
is one of the leading voices for the obedient movement. If you are on Twitter, search for Wemi Lube. She says a lot of amazing stuff, a lot of great stuff. So yeah, at the end of the episode, I will let them give out their Instagram or Twitter handles. I would also put it in the information on the episode so that you can always connect with them and see the amazing stuff they are doing. Yes, but let's get straight to it so I don't waste a lot of time. Thank you guys for coming on the episode today. First things first, on the 29th of
You're
Yeah, I mean, I
welcome.
remember I promised my listeners that we're going to talk about NYSC at 50, and I asked people to send in their voice notes telling me how they felt, their experience with NYSC. I'm still going to do that. I decided to put it on hold because I wanted to have these ladies here and it seemed more pressing. So I'll keep the NYSC one for the next episode. So if you have not sent me your voice note yet, you can still send it. Thanks for those that have already sent it to me. So yeah, moving forward, on the 29th of May, the new president, though controversial, the new president was sworn into the Federal Republic of Nigeria, and people tuned in to watch, people tuned in to listen. Personally, to be honest, I tried to watch it, but I was impressed, you know. But I later went on to read the speech. I would say it was a well-written speech. Whoever wrote it, thumbs up to you. It probably wasn't delivered as nice as it was written, but let me start with you, Afsat. Umi, when you watched or you read the speech, what did you think? What was your opinion on the speech?
Thank you. I actually did watch this speech and I have a different opinion from you. You know, you sound like you weren't very impressed by the speech when you had originally watched it. Yeah. I remember taking asking my Instagram followers on the day when it came out, you know, like what's their toll, like putting like a poll on and really just asking them, do they think that this was a better inauguration speech than the Buhari administration gave when it first came in? And to be honest, I definitely think so. I think he was very articulate. He was very promising. You know, I liked the fact that he did not shy away from anything. You know, he was heads on with it. He tackled the fact that he knows that his government or his administration is being contested. He actually mentioned that this is one of the most contested inauguration that there has been in a lot of years in Nigeria. I think that the points that he hits, just like the points during his campaign, they're very similar and they're very serious, very, you know, things that Nigerians need to hear, things that we need. However, I want to definitely be skeptic, or, you know, have some skepticism about Nigerian governance in general, because you even have the people who say the right things, the right words, and then they don't follow through. But the inauguration itself, I definitely feel like it was articulated, definitely hit the things that I was personally interested in. One of the most important points for me was where he spoke about his government is definitely going to be working hand in hand with youth and women to make sure that there's more inclusivity, you know, in his governance. Yeah. And I feel like, yeah, it was a good speech for me.
Great. We'll come to that. I mean, I think that's what we're going to spend a lot of time on this episode. But before we come to that, let me hear what we thought about the speech, if she watched or if she read it. Wemi, over to you.
Well, I didn't watch the speech, right? I caught a glimpse of it, but I didn't see the whole thing, right? So I missed that speech part. However, I read the speech, and I do think that it was a well-written speech, right? But I have a problem connecting with the person that read the speech. Yeah, like I said, I did not listen to him read it, but I've looked at the speech and I'm like, okay, yeah, whoever wrote this, I will give you your flowers. This is a good, I would not disregard it as a bad speech, right? At least compared to the last Umi said, compared to the last one. Yeah. It's a level up from that, but that's as much as I can say, a good written speech.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like when in 2015, when President Buhari was coming in, I feel more hopeful than I feel now. You know, when Umi says this sounded better, I mean, okay, well, we all have different opinions. I actually felt a lot more hopeful when President Buhari was taking over President Jonathan. And I don't know why, but you know, I was reading this speech and I felt like a girl who has been promised several times by guys. For some reason, you just lose the ability to trust anymore. And that's how I felt reading this speech. Yeah, I have trust issues.
I think for me, during Buhari's time, I was just kind of like, I don't see anything good coming from this. And I still feel the same way. So it's kind of like, I felt like this 8 years ago and now I'm still feeling the same way. It didn't, from Buhari till this new administration, I don't have this sense of hope that they are all speaking about hope, renewed hope. It's just kind of like, oh, the atmosphere is still the same, same. So, and I genuinely wish that there was a part of me that, you know, that is optimistic and all of that, but it's not. And it's just like, yikes.
I mean, I think I remember.
For me to feel the same way, oh my days. Like, am I wired differently?
I completely get that. However, I think I have a different sense of these things. Not necessarily different in, you know, in all the whole, you know, term.
Yeah.
But I think during Buhari's era, I wasn't as involved or, you know, politically aware as I am now. I mean, this is like 8 years ago. Technically speaking, we were not really caring about the kind of things that we care about now.
People should not make me sound like I'm too old, because I was.
No, it's not too old.
No, it's not that. I get what you're trying to say.
Exactly.
Yeah. 8 years is a very long time. And if you were just born,
the majority of us.
It is a big time.
Yeah, the majority of us were probably, you know, just leaving uni or, you know, at the peak of our becoming an adult. So you weren't really thinking politically, you weren't really thinking, oh, like, what is the awakening? And then in these 8 years, we've had this huge change and this huge movement, which was, you know, the end stars and everything that came after that, where like young people started to get seriously affected by a lot of policies, a lot of, you know, we started identifying the lapses we had in governance. A lot of people started waking up to the fact that, you know what, this country is actually not doing what it needs to do. It is not meeting standard, and I'm not going to take this anymore. You understand?
Yeah.
So that the whole of that, you know, all that sadness that came through that era, how the government reacted to it, how this issue is still unresolved up until right now. And then like coming into this election, like there was so much hope and all of that.
Yeah.
So I truly even think that, as much as I would say this is definitely a better speech, because I did watch, even at the time, I definitely did watch Buhari's, at least his second speech. However, this speech was certainly a better speech. But with the idea of being not really being hopeful, I think that's coming from our awakening in general.
Mm.
They have done so much like horrible situations
stuff.
Have happened in this country, that we just feel so disheartened. There's just, even with the election, for example, the election was just a complete mess.
Allow me cut you there.
Exactly.
Allow me cut you, because I feel like you're already going into things we want to talk about ahead. So let's just follow through. I mean, I agree with both of you. I know in 2015 I was in final year. I remember where I was when Boy was reading the speech.
You see,
I remember
Ife, you're not that old.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised. But I think maybe because from a very young age I just got really involved in Nigerian politics. But let's move on. So one of the first things that caught my attention when I was going through the speech was when he said, in his words, I'm reading directly from the speech now, "Our administration shall govern on your behalf, but never rule over you. We shall consult and dialogue, but never dictate. We shall reach out to all, but never put down a single person for holding views contrary to our own." First thing that caught me, and I was like, what? Because, I mean, looking at the campaign, I think, looking at your campaign, looking at incident, I can judge what you intend to do. I can judge your next steps. You know, looking at where you're coming from, I can judge your next steps. So, looking at where it's coming from, do you guys think that this is true? Or is this your slumber? I'd like to start with Wayne. In 1 minute, what do you think about this paragraph?
I think it's slumber. That's easier.
Okay.
It's slumber.
Okay. Why do you think it's slumber?
Yeah. You know, I said it, that it's one thing to write a good speech. It's another thing to implement it. And these people that want to implement these things, we've seen one or two of the antecedents.
Hmm.
So why do you think now that you are president, you're going to change because you have a presidential title?
Yeah.
Right. So for me, it's kind of like, we've been here before. We know this game.
To have my trust issues, right?
Yeah, I have my trust issues. Like I said, the problem is not the speech. The person that wrote the speech. It's the person that is going to deliver on that speech that's like our bone of contention. Yeah.
Umi, what do you think about that paragraph that I just read out to you?
I think, just like you've all said, I definitely, I agree with Wayne. I think that you know, kudos to whoever it is that wrote this, because clearly this person is good with crisis management. Mm. Just because we, crisis communication, sorry, this is because I think he had to put that in his speech because of the surrounding, you know, the situation that was surrounding his inauguration. There is this chunk of voting block that we have in this country because, like we know from data, the past election, people from 18 to like, I think 30 something, basically the young people had over 60 something percent vote. They made up the 67% of the voting block. So that basically means that, and this is where, like, technically we know that these people were not necessarily with, you know, the APC, the PDP.
Yeah.
And so he knows that he is coming into a country, or he's about to be inaugurated into a country where the majority of people are unhappy about him being president, or feel very uneasy about the situation. So when he says something like, oh, whether like you were for me or not for me, you know, that kind of, like, basically how they worded this, it seems to me like crisis communication. It seems to me like he's trying very hard to reach out to that voting bloc that did not clearly vote for him, or feels like he got there, he you know, butchered his way into that office and all of that. He's trying to make sure that everybody is, you know, peaceful and all, because as much as we know for a fact that, you know, the president is the president, is nobody without the citizens. Yeah. You have your politicians in a president's speech, he's literally telling you that he's going to, if this was Buhari's era, which I think there was a speech where during Buhari's administration where he said, I'm not for anybody, nobody, or something, you know, something very flimsy.
Nobody,
exactly, something
somebody.
Very, very flimsy like that.
With
like,
so much disregard for the masses.
With so much disregard, exactly. But then we have this president coming in, and, you know, as much as, you know, I like to also feel like, I'm very skeptical. I have that trust issue too, as well, with governance and all of that. It's just, you know, I like to be a bit more hopeful.
Yeah.
But it's very clear that, you know, now they want to make sure that people are on the same line with them. They want to make sure that they pull the youth as much as they can.
All right, great.
So I think
great.
That's the reason that part was there.
All right, great. So moving on to the next issue, and I've said this several times on this podcast, that we, the masses, we have the power, and we need a government that is people-centered, the government that cares about the people, government that is not doing what they think, what they assume people want, but what the people actually want. No, but moving on to the next thing that caused a lot of chaos in the country for the past 2 weeks, fuel subsidy. Reading through the script, there was really no way where it was written that fuel subsidy is gone in the way he said it. Well, I mean, he said it. And we saw the chaos that came from that. So my question now is, I mean, we all know that fuel subsidy for the longest time has been a scam. President Jonathan tried to take it out. This same ruling party was against it, but now they've done it. So I'm not even going to ask if you think it's right. I'm just thinking, do you think in 1 or 2 minutes, do you think there was a better way it could have been done? Let's start with you, Umi.
First off, I need to steal a word or two from a write-up I read, an article that was published by Omojua. And I think he said in that article that there are strategies in which that he feels like this administration needs to go by when they're handling situations like this, especially something that is very dire. Like, because the moment fuel subsidy comes off, and then the fuel prices go up, automatically everything in the country becomes more expensive.
Yeah.
Even water becomes more expensive. Things that you look at and you're like, how did this become, like, it's not even time for it to get expensive. We know that Nigerians are not exactly the most logical people when it comes to rumors and we're a very rumor-monging community. We are very quick to panic. We're not very strategic as a community. And that's something that I think these people also know, because we've seen them use, this is like, you know, politicians and leadership. We've seen them use things like this to their advantage as well. So it is not something he doesn't know. However, I certainly think that the approach that he used, just blurting it out like that, of course he knew that there was going to be, you know, a spillover from that speech. There's definitely going to be, and the reaction is certainly not going to be right. Because we have fuel stations in the country at the moment that have fuel for the next, that can take them, like they can keep selling that fuel for the next like 1 month, that they bought at the original price when it was still low. And then just like that, because he has said this and that, bam, they've started to sell it at a higher rate.
So how do you think he should have done it?
I certainly think that there should have been more thought that should have gone into that. I think that they should have, I will sit here and sound like someone who knows exactly what he should have done. But then I certainly think that there should have been people there who should have come up with a proper strategy as to how this thing, it shouldn't have been something that was told at the inauguration. And even if it was, it should have been something that was, you know, sort of explained. A better communication line should have been put out there. Should have gotten someone who now speaks to the country. This is almost 2 weeks since he became officially the president of the country, and nobody has sat down and, you know, spoken to Nigerians in a way that Nigerians will be able to understand. You need to let Nigerians know, okay, you know what, within so time, this is what's going to happen. This is what is going to, this so is what we're so going your, to your regulate. Opinion,
better communication could have been done.
Better communication. They should have explained to us how they are going to regulate it. Right, you don't one morning and change prices from 170 something naira to 500 naira. That's a lot.
Let's hear from Wemi. Let's hear what Wemi thinks about how it was done and how it could have been done.
Well, she has said everything. What is definitely again? I'm coming in as backup. Exactly. Nobody has a problem with removing subsidy. It is just how it was done. So for me, when the news of subsidies gone broke out, like I said, I didn't, you know, hear him read the speech. So I thought that that was part of the speech. Yeah. And, you know, I was having this conversation with my friend and I'm like, what if this thing he said wasn't even there? What if, you know, in our words, I was like, what if in Jabotokan? And we're like, you know, there was just that thing in me that says, ah, this guy if he jabber talk this thing, because it's too
it was very sporadic.
Very, very sporadic, insensitive to say the least, right? Because you know how this would, you know, take people from 0 to 100 emotionally. And my friend came the other day and she was like, it was not there. and I was like, so true. And it just goes to show that more of these, you know, sporadic decisions will happen again. And there are consequences to these things. Right now, the country is in your hand. You can't just, you know, do things like that. What are the cushion plans you have when you remove subsidy? Like I said, nobody is against removing subsidy. It is how you do it that matters, especially in a country like Nigeria, where the slightest thing can provoke us as citizens. You have to be very, very careful because these are people that have been through a lot. The economy is dealing with them. You just don't put them in a tight corner, right? It's, you know, it's kind of like I said, it's not the subsidy that was the problem. It was how it was said. Then the reaction is even worse than the thought of, oh, they removed subsidy. Because if that was done right, people are going to be like, okay, subsidy has been removed, but we have backup plans. Yeah. So you're not going to really feel it. I mean, you can tell something has changed, but you won't really feel it. And reading that speech again, going back to that conversation that I had, there was no plan to it. It was just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to say it. And whatever you feel about it, that's absolutely fine. And, you know, during the, there was an interview that I saw of the man where he said, whether you like it or not, though, I'm going to remove subsidy. So it's established that it was part of his plan, but it was how it was done. You don't take people on an emotional roller coaster like that, especially people that are finding it hard to survive.
I think for me, when I heard that part and when I read the speech again, it was funny because it contradicted what I read first about how his administration will govern on behalf of the people and never rule over you. Because if you really meant that first phrase, you will not come a few minutes later to come and tell me subsidy is removed without caring about what I feel, about how I feel about it. And everybody knows that subsidy is a scam. Goodluck Jonathan has been talking about it when he was president. These same people fought him, you know? And for me, I feel like subsidy is unnecessary. But like I told Umi a week ago, for a country that gives us nothing, I think we should have subsidy. For a country that gives us nothing, there's no healthcare, there's no free education, there's no proper transportation, there's no power. Nigerians literally have to provide every single thing for themselves. The only thing we gain from the government is for a subsidy. And I are taking the only thing. So like in the speech, what he read in the speech was, about how the former government was trying to phase it out, and which is what Peter Obi talked about several times, phasing out for subsidy. Not removing it once and for all. You know, you say, okay, look, we're taking away 50% subsidy, but in the meantime, we're improving our healthcare, we're improving transportation, we're improving schools. So when the masses see after 6 months or 12 months, that, okay, in these 6 or 12 months,
right,
even though subsidy was removed by 50%, we saw improvement in healthcare. We can now go to government hospitals and receive free healthcare.
Exactly. There is something to fall back on.
We can now go to schools. Our children don't have to go to private schools anymore. They can now go to public schools and get cheaper education. Then when you come after 1 year and tell me we're taking subsidy completely, I trust you wholeheartedly that life is going to be easier for me. But now, trust me, in September, school fees are going to increase. Transportation is already crazy. My friend was telling me how from Awoyaya to CMS, it used to be 700, now it's 1.5, it has doubled.
Can I even just take away from this transportation thing? I just did like a random call for all my friends, and I called the particular one that works at Aja, and he stays at Epe, and that's still the distance. And I was like, hi, what's going on? How far now? I'm just calling to check up on everybody, and I want to use style to ask how the world is. Yeah, it don't matter.
Wow. It's okay. 1-0. I'll do you back before this episode ends.
I just want to call and confirm how the road is like. You know, you guys are the one that goes to work every single day. And he was like, bro, I'm done. Nobody should call me outside for anything except for work. Let us hang out. The answer is no. And I was just like, he was like, we will hang out virtually. We're going to have Zoom calls. You buy your Coke, I'll buy my Fanta.
Actually,
we're going to do it virtually.
That needs to become a thing.
Don't forget that a few months ago, we battled the whole issue with currency. Nigerians are broke. Nigerians are suffering. Companies are leaving.
You can imagine during the currency period how hectic it was.
So the least you could have done is cushion this effect for us. Don't just take it off. Add to the pain, add to the salt, add to the, I don't even want to think about that one now. So let's move on. Subsidy, well, it's been done. Let's hope that for some reason the government has a quick fix to all of this, a quick way to put in, to cushion this effect. So let's move on to the next, which I think is another important thing that was said in the speech. He said in his exact words, our administration, women and youths will feature prominently. And I've had a lot of youths say, this is just Lamba. Personally, I'm looking at the activity, I'm looking at the campaign. How much were youths involved in the campaign? How much were youths used, to good use? How much were our abilities put to good use? So I'm like, am I sure it's going to happen? Somebody has joked about the fact that his wife is already attending meetings the first day they should not attend. So maybe women will actually feature. But that was a joke, That was, to me, in my opinion, his wife had no business being in the meeting which she was. That's not for today. So, I am just a youth, but you guys are both youths and women. So what do you think from that promise that youths and women will feature? Do you think it's going to happen or is it just Lamba? I'll start with you, Wemi.
Right, two things, women and youth, which I consider as an endangered species, because as a woman living in Nigeria, I feel like an endangered species. But that's a story for another day. Mm-hmm. Now, I see how women are treated in politics. We are not the majority, right? We don't have like the largest number in Nigerian politics. Now, the women that are there, they are treated as second fiddle. Right. Yeah. And we have beautiful, amazing, intelligent women that when they give advice, they don't take it. I don't want to make this thing like a feminist thing and all of that, but it is what it is. We are not treated.
Please go ahead.
We are not treated fairly and equally. Like, we would give you advice, but I don't know why to some of them it's kind of like, who do you think you are to give me advice? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, I'm in that position to give you that advice. I worked to get into that position. So you're supposed to take my advice. Who else is going to give you a better advice? Especially when I know that my advice is top tier. Why are you feeling intimidated? My job is not to make you feel less intimidated. My job is to make you, know that this is what you need to do and you should get it done. But no, they don't listen to us. I'm not saying that we don't have some women who get it wrong in politics. That's not it at all, right? So I don't see how they're going to make it better. What positions are you going to give to women? Are you giving it to them because they are women, or you're giving it to them because they are deserving of it, right? Because I do not want a situation where women are involved because let's try to bring in women. No, give it to us because we deserve it. We worked for it. We have the qualifications for it. So is that something they are going to intentionally look out for? Or they are just going to start
Because if you get this
just
thing
to
wrong,
fulfill a quota.
Say, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if we get this thing wrong, they say, oh, finally, we said that we should involve women and all of that.
Like
now they've involved mm-hmm. women, and look at mm-hmm. it now. Look at this. Mm-hmm. Women are this. Women are that. Mm-hmm. Those mm-hmm. type of things. I don't want that. So if you're going to give it to us, give it to the best heads that we have there. Now, mm-hmm. in regards to the youth, we have the will, the power, and the strength to go that far. And sometimes I feel like they take advantage of it like crazy. You can say that, yet, youth were involved in this whole election cycle and the likes. Yeah, we did have the major votes. We came with like a new block. However, we're just getting into the process. And we could see that while we were getting into the process, a lot of elder statesmen were not happy with that because it felt like we were coming to, you know,
steal from them,
compete with them, replace them. And it wasn't the case. We were joining. We needed them to, you know, make it a seamless entrance for us, a seamless transition for us. We came in there, and as an elder statesman, it is your job to kind of guide us. Nobody is saying that, oh, yeah, we can't do it alone. We won't need advice from time to time. Good advice is wonderful advice. If you give us the right advice, we will take it. And as young Nigerians get into the political space, we come with fresh ideas, innovations, and we are the only ones that know how to do it because these innovations are coming in our time. So it is your job as an elder state person. You might not know it all, but to listen to us, we give you the numbers, we give you the technical know-how and tell you that, okay, this is how it's meant to go. And it is your job to now say, okay, from my experience in the terrain, this is how to plug that in. But we are easily dismissed because they don't understand that. I want to see the how that they want to do this. Are we supposed to just be a tool for them? Are we going to keep being a tool for them because we are naive in some areas and they take advantage of it? Mm. Like I said, we are young. We are learning, but we're learning fast.
We're going to make mistakes,
but don't weaponize our mistakes against us because that is what it always feels like every single time. So when you say you want to involve youth and women, that's an old line. We've been here. We've done that. What is the difference? So how are you going to get us plugged in? Are you just here to use our strength and naivety? Or you actually want to get us in the right way? You actually want to extract the knowledge that we have and implement it the right way?
All right. So that is allow me to cut you here. Thank you so much. I mean, I totally agree with you because I checked most of our military head of states, most of the Buharis, the Obasanjos, the Gowons, they reached the peak of their careers in their early 30s. And here we are. Some of us are already in our mid-30s. We're not Misha. Some people are already in their mid-30s and they still call them youths. You know, we saw Dimeji Bankole when he ran for the primaries and he was like, he's stepping down for his father. I'm like, bro, if you're in your 40s, what are you? You are not a youth anymore. Stop claiming youths. You know, but yeah, after Wumi, let me hear what you have to say. Wemi, I said a lot, but just throw some light. What do you think about the president's promise of involving youths and women?
Okay, so first off, with the youth thing, I think what Wemi was trying to explain is one of the disadvantages of Africanism in governance. And I think this particular part is, you know, let me get that clear. I don't think that Africanism in governance is completely, you know, debunked or, you know, just wrong. I think that ageism in Africanism is one of the biggest things that have been brought into governance when it comes to third world countries and, you know, Nigeria and all of that, where older people look at you and say you don't have the experience because they came up with, you know, this proverb that says what a old man can see sitting down, a young person cannot see on the mountain. I don't know where the logic of that came from. I don't know why they have felt like that's something they can use to suppress us.
They said now that what the elders will sit sitting down, we go use drone to see them.
Do you understand? But, you know, I think that with the new administration, I'm definitely a bit more hopeful about that. I'm quite hopeful about it because I've heard from, you know, first off, like I said, I don't think it has been in the curriculum of leaderships to usually they will lie to our faces or, you know, just blatantly not even care to be accountable to us. But then these people have, you know, sort of been reiterating the fact that they want to have more women inclusion, they want to have more young people in governance and all of that. However, the part of female inclusion, that's something that I particularly am very, very, you know, that's something that it's in my core. And I think it's very important to put things into perspective. Currently in the new administration, I'll say from, you know, the National Assembly, we have only 16 women out of 360 members. Only 16. That means that women are, if they make up just 4% of National Assembly at the moment. And as women, we make more than half of the population of the country. So we are having only 4 women represent more than half of Nigeria's population. Now, okay, so we have 16 women. There are 4 very important seats in the National Assembly at the moment now, because clearly we've lost to the executive. We saw with our own eyes, we have less than 19% of the entire population of people who, you know, we voted for being actual women from the lowest office in the state to the presidency. But then let's go to the National Assembly now. We have about 4 major seats at National Assembly. In the upper house, we have, you know, the speaker and then the deputy speaker, and then we have Senate president, and then the deputy Senate president, and then the lower house, the House of Reps, we have the speaker and the deputy speaker. And then since 1990, we've never had a woman as the Senate president or deputy Senate president. It is ridiculous. 16 years going, why? Why? There have been women who, in fact, one of the women that we've even spoken about, Remy Tinubu, she's been in the assembly for several years, and we've never had one. We've never had anybody as the speaker or the deputy speaker being a woman or being a young person. And this is like 40 years under. This is how ridiculous it is to the situation we are as
exactly
a country that is extremely marginalized. And now we finally have one woman now who's running. I think one of the senators, one of the House representatives from, I think, Imo State, Miriam, she's running for deputy House of Representatives, deputy speaker, And I really hope that, you know, a couple of days ago, I saw a Punch headline and it read, Tinubu begs the National 10th Republic National Assembly to invest in female inclusion and then bring back the seat bill. Now, I don't know if your listeners or, you know, if we even are, but I think it's important to discuss how we had a seat bill. Basically, it is something where we request that a certain percentage of election positions be given to women, be allocated to women. This is something that has worked in other countries like Uganda, in South Africa, in Kenya. These are countries that are doing so fantastically well with inclusion of marginalized communities. And when I say marginalized, I'm trying to involve everybody, because we have a bunch of, we the young people, we have disabled people, we have women, you know, we need to be able to put everybody into, because we need representation. These people are also citizens. So if you're giving me a speech that basically says that, you know, you want to be the government for all people, you want to have inclusion and all of that, and so he begs the National Assembly to bring back this bill. In 2021, the bill was brought up to the lower house, the House of Representatives, and was thrown out on International Women's Day in 2021. It was it was a huge slap. And the fact that that did not get the recognition that it needs is also a problem. So this is the perfect space for me to bring this up. And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. And now the president now says, oh, you know what, I need you to revisit, I need National Assembly, to the 10th Republic National Assembly, to please revisit that bill and see how we can make it into a law. And I think that only from this alone, I personally felt, okay, just maybe, because there's bare amount of people who do not even speak about it. Sure. Talk less of it actually being a thing where, you know, he's making it visible, he's making it audible and all of that. And to pick that particular bill, because I truly think that the moment we have
more representation, especially as women. Actually, me personally, as a Northern woman, I think I understand more than anything what it is like to be oppressed because of your gender, or what it is to be kept quiet. Do you understand?
Hey,
I like to look at the individual first before I look at the institutional person. And I think I did that with Buhari as well. I looked at him as Buhari before I even looked at him as President Buhari. Because I think that you don't lose yourself when you're in that seat. It's who you, if you're a good person, you make good policies. You lead people better. You understand? And then I think that you made a statement with, you don't think that Remy Tinubu, like, it should have any effect, or you don't think that she should certainly be in certain meetings and all that. I will take this any day of the year because, one, like Wayemi said, she has experience. She's not just there because she's a woman, because she's just the president's wife. She has experience with leadership. She's been in the Senate for more than 8 years. A decade or something like that. And then to come to the other administration, the administration that just left, this is the administration that openly told us that his wife belongs in the other room and the kitchen, which, and this is something
so he in other words, simultaneously
took out the office of the first lady. No, I need that office reinstated. I need a strong woman there because I need people to be able to understand that this is a strong woman. Women are strong people.
All right. Thank you so much.
I personally think we're on the right track.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
let me just take you from what she said.
Okay, wait, please, can you just do this in like 1 minute?
This is what happens when
I try to keep my podcast within a certain time, Let me just wrap up. Just say what you want to say in 1 minute.
Let me just take you in regards to Remy Tinubu and all of that. Now we have a first lady that is perceived as a strong woman and all of that. Mm-hmm. And we are talking about the person and not the person in office. Now, I would love to see Remy challenge the norm, let her go against the norm. I would love to see her say that, look, I am one of the women folk. I am a leading woman, and there's a place that I draw the line. I would love to see that. I would love to actually see her say that, CEO, I know that you guys don't feel my husband, but I and my husband are two different things. But when it comes to this woman matter, I would carry it on my head like Gaga. I would love to 100. See that. Honestly,
yes. That would be lovely. Pull that off. That would be the icing on the cake.
I have my reservations about everyone. I'm not going to say because, I'm a woman, you're a woman, when you do something wrong. When you do something wrong, that I will come for you heavily.
Hold you stronger, yes.
Yeah, because so now that she's really in hard that position, for this, so. Now that she's in that position and she has been in power for the longest time, I would want to see her pull in more women, not just anyhow women, women that are deserving
and have what it takes to do the job.
So this brings women that brings me to the last or the next thing I want to see.
Yeah, so if she can pull that off, I will give her accolades and tell
her flowers.
This is Remy coming through for the women folk, right?
Great.
In the past we've seen a lot of
Nigerian women do great things. Some of the best things that happened in government in Nigeria have been due to women, like Dora Akunyili, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, and a lot, No doubt women can do amazing stuff if given the opportunity to. No doubt. I still don't think though that the first lady should be in certain meetings. I feel like certain meetings are restricted to certain people. But I'm going to wrap up now with this. I feel insulted when I see things like, oh, they want to give 40% to women. And I feel like there shouldn't be a cap. They shouldn't be saying 40% involvement of women, 40% involvement of youth. I think if anybody, like, I think it was Wemi that said it. Because when you say that, it's because it's a charity case. We want to give.
Nobody gives women 10%.
Nobody gives women. If women are deserving, women should go for it.
Oh, no.
Women should vote.
Oh, no, but
I don't agree with this. 80%. I'm going to give other people.
I don't agree with this. I think a lot of countries do this. Like I mentioned, there are a bunch of countries from Rwanda to Uganda to Kenya. So a lot of other African countries have started
to do you know why we have things like this, Umi?
It's very, very, very tricky to get into politics because of the way our government and, you know, no, like everything.
The reason why is that, like you said, Africanism. If we can take away the Africanism.
Yeah,
Africanism,
it should be an equity conversation.
Yeah, no, we should not take you from that. It can be the difference.
The conversation now is equity. See, for instance, now, a man is tall, he's like 6 feet and all of that. So he can see everything from 6 feet. Then you bring a woman and tell her, oh, she's like 5'5 or something like that. But she has the same intellectual capacity as the man. But she can't see what the man is seeing, or she can't be viewed the way the man can be viewed. Well, that's already equality because you put both of them in front of the line. What we are asking for is equity, where you give the woman a stool and tell her to stand so that the people at the other side can listen to her, or they can hear, or they can hear. And then she gives her presence. That's equity. That's literally how I look at this. Giving a percentage to people, you should, because we're already in a situation where it's not going anywhere. It's not just we're never going to be the community where we just think about and we're like, yes, let's just give a woman because she has so much sense. I have to end the conversation now
because I'm out of time.
I really
appreciate you girls coming on. You ladies, not girls, you women coming on this episode.
We are a baby girl, we accept it.
I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate you pouring out your heart. And I'm sure everybody listening, every female, would enjoy it. Now, people are making me scared of bringing females on my podcast because I'm sure that it's going to 1 hour plus.
This is the equity and equality that we're talking about. Bring more females because
we clearly have more to speak about. If people will allow me to stick to my time that I want to stick to, I would definitely. I was joking when I said I won't bring more. I will tell you that you're being gender biased. Okay, I'm sorry. Before they go and drag me on Twitter and call me anti women,
they will. They have.
Don't drag me. I have to. I say this all the time, and I know them.
They're very fabulous women.
I say this all the time that I have two wonderful women that I try to give as much space to be themselves as they can be. So it's the same thing as how I treat them. I know this for a fact. Yeah. So thank you guys. Please don't drag him.
So women are the only ones that can actually come out to address these things because we are women. We will tell you what a woman feels, what she knows, and what she understands, and we'll tell you when we are wrong. Umi said something that kind of changed my mindset
because, like I was saying earlier, I've had this conversation several times. I've argued. I've always thought of it should be based on merit. But the truth is, like Umi said, we may never get to that position as a country or as people that it will be based on merit. There still needs to be some level of equity and say, okay, look, we want to make a rule that says it has to be 50% involvement of women or 40%. I thought that was wrong. I thought it was a blow on women's face. I'm so very iffy about that because
I think when it comes to the other side of the spectrum, it don't necessarily have a percentage. So I'm just kind of like, about. I see where she's coming from, but I'm still very, very iffy about it. I want us to be given, like, our fair cut
because we are deserving of it.
Yeah. That's just all right.
Because when you say things like percentage,
don't treat me like a second option because I am not.
Yeah, because when you say things like, if I bring my brains to the table,
just know that you are getting the best brains.
Yeah, because when you say things like a percentage,
yes, I'm with
it,
you.
It
I'm
says
with
things
you.
Like when you say things like percentage, it comes like, oh, there's a quota we have to fill it. Just put any woman there.
It can swing both ways, because we need the best brains.
We need the best. We need merit. We need competence, regardless of gender, regardless of religion. regardless of tribe. We need the best brains making the best decisions. If it's a woman that is the best, give the chance to her. If it's a man that is the best, give the chance to him because he deserves it, because she deserves it, not because you have to fill a particular quota. That's always been my opinion about these things. But yeah, I need to wrap up.
Yeah, now. And this is why I say that whenever there's a woman in a powerful position, let her find her own identity and let her identify with the
So thank you guys. Thank you guys so much.
Women folk, we are not trying to make this thing a feminist thing, but you need to find your own identity outside so that we can identify you and say, yeah, we understand, we get that circumstances around you is messy, but to the women folk, you did this, because that conversation will keep coming up.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
If you are going to feel anything, don't feel in that side.
All right. I'm sure the women in government are already hearing you. So thank you so much, Wemi, for coming on this episode. Thank you, Umi. I will not lie. I've had a great time listening to you guys. I've had a great time talking to you guys. And I'm sure everybody listening has had a great time listening about it. So if you are listening, remember, do me a favor. Share this link, especially if you're a woman. Share this link to somebody else. Let them know that this is an interesting question. They could tune into the podcast and you know, and don't forget to drop a feedback, don't forget to drop a comment. If you want to drop a voice comment, you can send me a voice note on Instagram. My Instagram handle is @nefe_o, or if you're using Anchor to listen, you can record a voice reply, and I promise if your voice reply is good enough, it's going to be on the next episode. And don't forget, I need you guys to share your experiences from NYC. That's also going to be on the next episode, so just send a voice note telling me about your experience from NYC. Do you think it should be stopped? Do you think it should remain? So yeah, thank you guys one more time. Thank you, Umi. I'll give you
all
guys,
right, thank you.
Give you 1 minute to tell the listeners how they can connect with you, either on Instagram or on Twitter, wherever you are alive. If there's anything you're doing, you need the listeners to connect. I know Umi does this every Sunday Instagram live. So in 1 minute, just tell us how we can connect with you. Let's start with you, Umi.
Oh, fantastic. So please, you can follow me on Instagram with Ooms. This is WithUmms.
WithUmms. How many M's?
Three M's.
Three M's. So with Ooms.
Yes.
WithUmms. Instagram. Is that the same for Twitter?
Yes. Well, no, not really. My Twitter is a lot more private than it is political.
So Instagram is where we see your...
So my Instagram is there, exactly. Okay. So please follow me and let's continue the conversation.
Yeah. So Wemi, how can we connect with you, Wemi?
Well, just I'm on Twitter. Twitter is my domain, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
I have to... or any other social media platform. So my Twitter is _Weyimi. So that is _WEYIMI. So I'm always on Twitter, and I host
she lives
spaces.
There. She lives on Twitter.
I live
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I'm following you right now. So
yeah. So I host. I and my crew. Yeah, we host spaces every single day. So it's kind of like a radio thing. So right now we are kind of like covering the tribunal, right? In regards, like. Everybody knows that I don't hide that I'm a Peter Obi supporter, so I kind of lean towards that side and I give updates in regards to that. So the space is always running and you can always tune in. I might not be the one hosting, but somebody from the crew will host. That's just how it is. And I also have conversations about so many other things.
She's not a preacher of love on Twitter. She's in that.
I'm not a preacher of love. I'm very murder democracy. Yeah. Murder democracy. You're gonna go to prison because you murdered democracy. It's all love at the end of the day. So yeah, you can catch me on Twitter. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you everybody for listening. Like I always say, God bless you and God bless the Federal Republic of Nigeria.